Welcome to Storyline, a ReligionLink podcast that features religion reporters who tell us how they got the story. I'm Kim Lawton.
And I'm Kimberly Winston. We're both journalists who have covered religion for a lot of years. We love the beat, and we always want to learn from other religion reporters.
In this episode, we talk with Sam Kestenbaum. He's a freelance religion reporter based in Los Angeles. His work has appeared in the New York Times, The Washington Post, Rolling Stone, Religion News Service, and elsewhere. He's won many awards, including the Rock Hour Award for Excellence in Feature Writing and top prizes from the Silurians Press Club and the Society of Features Journalism.
Sam's name is one that will be familiar to many who cover the religion beat or follow religion news. He's made a name for himself writing stories many of the rest of us don't. Stories about New Age gurus, doomsday prophets, and religions that either don't believe COVID is real or think that they can cure it. Today, we'll ask Sam about a story he wrote for the August 2022 issue of Rolling Stone magazine, not the usual outlet for a religion feature. Kim, why'd we pick this story?
For me, it was a really interesting profile of Clay Clark. He's a conservative Christian entrepreneur who organized what he called a Reawaken America tour that took place in megachurches all over the country. It was describing Clay Clark himself, his beliefs, his motivations, and his background. But it also described these rallies and what occurred during these rallies. And I have to say, I knew nothing about them until I read this article. I didn't know that it was bringing together evangelicals and Pentecostals with pro-Trump political activists, anti-COVID vaccine activists, and even New Age gurus. I've covered a lot of stories about evangelicals and politics over the years, but this really seemed new and different to me. What stood out for you?
Well, for me, it was like, it was the deep dive that you take with Sam into this subculture of a subculture, right? It's this evangelical subculture, but then there's this little weird, God, New Age Christian political subculture beneath that. And the access he got and the detail that he got just added so much to the story. I felt like, even though I'd never heard of this thing before, I felt like I was there with him. It was just, this was one of those things where I have story envy. And that's like the highest compliment that I can give a story. So why don't we hear a little bit of the story from Sam himself?
The cast assembles on the megachurch stage, each taking their turn in a pool of light. There are doomsaying prophets with curved shofars, aspiring politicians lamenting election fraud, and naturopathic physicians warning of demonic invasion. Mike Lindell steps forward and says evil forces are undoing the nation. Roger Stone gives an apocalyptic homily. Michael Flynn lobs t-shirts into the pews. Scott McKay, alias Patriot Street Fighter, gyrates to the sounds of AC/DC while chopping a tomahawk in the air. In time, the Trump brothers appear and Eric puts his dad on speakerphone. Praise music floats in the air, and the crowd rocks back and forth. At one moment, a woman drops to the floor, hallelujah, hallelujah, and speaks in tongues.
Welcome to Storyline, Sam.
I'm ready.
You managed to get your byline in some very unusual places for religion coverage. I've seen it in Rolling Stone. I've seen it in the New York Times style section, all these different places. How do you pitch your religion stories to those places? Do you have to downplay the religion angle to the story, or do you frame the religion angle in a way that fits those outlets? You know, what do you do to get religion stories in places like Rolling Stone?
Part of it has to do with that I'm pitching these places as a freelancer, sometimes to places that already have devoted religion beat writers. For example, New York Times has two really great religion writers who cover national stories. I find myself pitching feature sections there, be that Styles, Business, Metropolitan. And, you know, one of the challenges, but I have come to enjoy it, is convincing editors who may not pay attention to the ins and outs of denominational news or what's happening in the Catholic Church or the SBC, and convince them of a story's import, you know, for their section. So does that mean downplaying? I don't think it means downplaying what we would call like the religious or the religion angle to it, but it's about persuading somebody that it's an interesting story on its own merits that would interest their readers, be they Rolling Stone or various feature sections at the Times.
In your Rolling Stone article, I'm curious how you convinced Clay Clark to play ball with you. I mean, especially given, you know, so many evangelicals and political conservatives really have a lot of hostility toward the media. So how did you convince him to go ahead with this? And did he know you were writing for Rolling Stone?
Yeah, no, Clay knew, he knew the whole deal. How did I convince him? I mean, you know, part of it is I think something that any reporter will know, is just like not giving up, is just, bugging people, making yourself a sort of, lovable pest in a way. And in Clay's, in the case of Clay, you know, I'd come to him, by the time I wanted to write the Reawaken America tour, I'd already written several pieces in that sort of corner of American religion, the charismatic Pentecostal, Christian right, we could say, Christian nationalist, we can say. So I guess Clay saw, you know, he was able to read up on me a little bit, and could tell that I at least, you know, had some footing in this world. And, you know, I mean, Clay's a smart guy, or a savvy person. And, you know, I think that he made some sort of calculus about what, you know, what he might get out of, you know, allowing me access, I guess, like any source does.
Maybe talk a little more about the timeline that you did and how you got that story and how it built from one over to another and one story led to another.
So I attended one of those Reawaken America tours. Now it was in the summer of 2021. Having attended, I could tell it was something I wanted to write about. I knew it was something I wanted to write about. There was just so much going on. It was such a rich scene with all of these various strains of things, prophecies, pandemic stuff, these elements of religious revival. It was happening at a mega church in Anaheim, as I said, where they were running their own media outlet out of that. All the people on stage were known names within this, within this MAGA universe, what I'm sort of now calling the Clay Clark extended universe, all of these characters who have their own backstories and he boosts them in this way. And so that was my initial view of it. And I said, how can I get in with these people? How can I write about this? And there was another story along the way towards the Rolling Stone story, which was a profile of a new age author who was on the stage at these Clay Clark shows, who I already knew her backstory and was really intrigued to see this new age author, this character within the kind of new age religious world, integrate so seamlessly into the charismatic Pentecostal MAGA circuit. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a story about her as well. Christiane Northrup is her name, and that was for the Washington Post. I don't generally do these write around pieces, but in that case, she would not play ball. But Clay Clark did. And I reached out to him in the course of reporting that because I wanted to know how their relationship developed, how she came to be on his tour. And he got right back to me. In most of the coverage, I found that Clay Clark was a kind of an afterthought, maybe even like a punchline to other stories. That is, like, Michael Flynn has gotten a lot of coverage and his would be transformation from respectable general to conspiracy theorist gets a lot of attention. And Clay Clark, functions as a kind of a plot point. Mm. And I was really interested in Clay Clark as a person himself, as a religious figure, as a political figure, as a showman, as a kind of a carnival barker. And I really wanted to zoom in on him as a character.
I see the breadcrumbs. So I can follow your breadcrumb trail. That's really interesting. One story begets another, begets another, begets another. Mm-hmm. And so when you approached Reawaken America, what kind of access did they give you? Did they give you full access? Did they have any parameters, any rules? And how did they treat you when you were on the scene?
Yeah. I mean, Clay is an almost unnervingly accessible person. In fact, Clay was like texting me daily and, you know, really in close touch with me. And in the operation, I mean, is really pretty bare bones. I mean, you know, that's one of the, you know, peculiar things about it is it looks very grand and, you know, I think quite threatening to certain viewers. I mean, it's really Clay and a couple of his employees who run this thing. And Clay gave me, I mean, Clay invited me to Tulsa, to the headquarters where they, the sort of nerve center of the whole operation, and invited me there. Their first large event, then called Clay Clark's Health and Freedom Conference, was held in April of 2021 at Rhema Bible College, a Pentecostal landmark in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Some speakers were compensated for travel, organizers say, and also given the opportunity to sell their wares. The event drew thousands and garnered headlines with promises of a ritualized face mask fire. Clark says the bonfire didn't materialize after all. "Hug someone you don't know," he told the crowd that weekend. "COVID won't kill you." Clark's vision for the show would gradually take on a more supernatural aura. Encouraged by his wife, Vanessa, and other friends, he began checking out a steady stream of prophecy-themed content published by Pentecostal outlets like Charisma Media and Elijah Streams, where self-proclaimed oracles viewed current events through an otherworldly lens and heralded Trump as a divinely ordained leader. There's like a lot of access, at least in the invitation. You know, and in part it's that's Clay's like very delicate balance of things where he's in an environment that is, I would say, exceedingly hostile towards, you know, so-called mainstream media.
Yeah, I would think so.
And this like performance of hatred of undercutting of the authority of mainstream media is happening almost in every speaker on stage. But Clay is on the other hand, you know, texting probably every journalist who contacts him. Yeah. So it's this like back and forth with him. And he needs to kind of maintain that, I think.
This goes to the question about how you got access. How many days were you actually with Reawaken America?
Only on site, I would say 4 days.
Wow.
You know, I think, you know, something that I tried to bring out in this piece is that, you know, these things are, you know, entertaining. They are entertainment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when friends would ask me, "What are you doing this weekend?" or whatever, so I'm going to, you know, I'm going to like, the MAGA Warp Tour or, you know, MAGA Burning Man or something. That these are, I mean, there's something, they're like endurance, tests in some way, cause they go on and on and on.
Right.
But there's so much activity. There's so much commerce happening. There's so much, action at these things. And I think that we see that in, you know, that's a part of their appeal. And I tried to bring that out, that as people pay to go to these things, yes, to be washed over with prophecies and with culture war, messaging, but also to be in community and buy things and listen to music and see their favorite celebrities on stage. So there's this, this entertaining quality of it that I tried to bring out in the piece. And, so I was there for 4 days with them and just in a lot of conversations with Clay over a longer period of time on the phone. Because at the tour itself, Clay was not like accessible. You know, I was there to sort of watch him in action, but I wasn't there to interview him in like a strict sense. I wanted to see him doing his thing. And it's those sort of observations of how a person moves through the world, what they, how they answer the phone, how they eat their lunch, all these sort of things that that I think a style of feature writing can really bring alive for readers.
You mentioned earlier that you had covered celebrity New Age Dr. Christiane Northrup, who's a speaker at some of these Reawaken America tours. And honestly, that blew my mind. Just the thought that at these megachurch stages, you have this person who has very distinct New Age spirituality theologies that she talks about right there with some of the Pentecostal and evangelicals. I mean, did you know about this evangelical New Age convergence before you started reporting on these stories?
Yeah, I mean, you know, these sort of overlaps or convergence moments have always interested me. And, you know, the overlap or the admixing, the mixture of seemingly disparate, as you said, theologies or like modes of American religion are always, I think, worth paying attention to, these kind of genre mashups that are happening. And it's, you know, it's on the one hand novel, because Christiane Northrup was once on the Oprah show and now she's on like QAnon stages, and that is interesting. But on the other hand, you know, in that piece for the Washington Post, I also tried to sort of track and show how it, if not inevitable, was not, there were always elements of kind of entrepreneurship, interest in hidden knowledge, and she's interested in sort of questioning mainstream narratives. So in following her story, that meeting of the New Age and the Pentecostal seems less surprising, or at least that's what I sort of tried to show.
Let me ask you this question. When I see your byline, I know I'm in for a trip. Okay. I know I'm going some places that I haven't been in my reporting or in too many other people's reporting. I'm thinking of your story on the so-called New York subway psychic. I'm thinking of the former Wall Street trader who became a channeler of Jesus and Freddie Mercury, you know, as one does after they leave Wall Street. Mm-hmm. As a freelancer, it seems very clear to me that you have carved out a specialty for yourself beyond just being a religion reporter, that you have a specialty of New Age, new religious movements, sometimes referred to as NRMs. How did you come to do that?
You know, I mean, on the one hand, you know, I think we follow the things that interest us, but I think, and I don't discount that. I think that's an important piece of it. But I also think that these kind of generative edges of American religion are where a lot of things happen. A lot of that is, things feel quite fringe until they don't. And you know, this, you know, I think this bears out the if we look at sort of the state of American political religious life right now, that these things feel far less fringe than they maybe have. And, you know, I think that I also approach I approach my stories often thinking about what consumers or congregants are interested in about the things that they choose to follow. That is, I'm interested in the kind of the consumer side or the reception side of be that religious media or religious experience. So, you know, I try to reflect that. And I think people are interested in peculiar things. And I think that the peculiar draws people in.
Sam, your stories contain so much detail and so much description. I feel like you really paint a picture for your reader and set the scene for us. And I'm wondering if you're willing to share with us some of your process in doing that. I mean, do you record everything around you? Do you take photos so you remember? Do you just take really specific notes? How do you capture those details and remember them so you can tell them to your audience?
Yeah, I mean, I take a lot of notes and I do a lot. If I can, I do a lot of site visits. That is, say, for example, a piece I wrote last in the spring about a faith healer in Los Angeles who had become big on TikTok, as one does. And over the course of the pandemic, and she was holding these open air exorcism bonanzas every weekend at a park here in Los Angeles. And, you know, like a lot of these things, I did a site visit without a notebook, without, you know, just to sort of see if there was something to gather string, as we'd say. After establishing a contact, I did interviews with her over the phone, I think on Zoom. That allows me, once I have those things down, then I can be there looking for a scene, for material that can help me describe her. And, you know, part of that's just good feature writing, but I think there's something else there that has to do with specifically with how we write about religion. And I think that the experiential, the sometimes fun, the sometimes scary, these experiential qualities of religious life map really well, or feature writing serves really well, can serve really well to describe these things. Right. So in the case of these park revivals, you know, it allows me to try to paint a picture of what it feels like to be an audience member, to see this woman come on stage and for demons to manifest in these families, these people who come up on stage, and to what it's like to see that. And so I would spend time both watching her, but also like watching the crowd. How sure. are they taking it? What do they get out of this? Are they into it? Are they duped? Are they critical? Are they uncritically taking it in? Are they kind of skeptics themselves? What is the varied experience there? Are they just getting watermelon and snacks and sitting down for entertainment? And the answer is all the above.
So let me follow up on that question. That's how you paint the scene, how you record everything, how you write it down. I'm interested in the fact that you managed to write about people with some very unusual beliefs and practices. Mm-hmm. And I never feel that you are ridiculing them or belittling them. My personal favorite is where, and it was almost a throwaway, I think it was in your story about the subway psychic. There was a psychic who claimed she could cure illness with a magic banana. And you just kind of threw that out there. By the way, you know, she thought she could cure people with a magic banana. Or the way you wrote about the subway psychic Keanu when you came to your ultimate interview with her, and she said, you got to give me $600 so I can take care of the guardian angels. And, you know, there were a lot of ways you could have written about it. And I think you wrote, I told her that I would deal with the guardian angels myself, and packed up and went home. And I think all of those are very graceful examples of showing, but not judging. How do you approach that when you sit down to write? What do you think about?
I take subjects seriously, mm-hmm. And I take readers seriously too. So I don't think folks need to be guided in interpretation, mm-hmm. any more than. I want to guide their gaze through a scene, through a world, but I don't want to tell them explicitly how they must interpret that. Mm. Of course, I'm choosing what to show. That is, you know, oftentimes there's a way that we allow experts to do the interpretation for us, yes. as reporters. Mm-hmm. There's this sort of style of, all right, you know, dial the expert, you know,
yes.
and you call them up and they provide a quote, and that's where the interpretation happens. And this
I'm
is
guilty all, of that, by the way, guilty as charged. And,
we all are. We all. Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is with all respect to experts, to scholars. I want readers to be the ones doing that mm-hmm. interpretation. And if I've done my job well, then there's like some ambiguity there, And the reader can sit with that. And I'm okay with some ambiguity. Back at the Virginia Megachurch, Clark and the staff stand inside the dim auditorium, considering a promo image that is displayed on a glowing screen. Flynn, flanked by guards, hovers nearby. Early birds and vendors have begun arriving outside, yet Clark is still putting the finishing touches on this image, which he has been working on for months. He still keeps an early sketch in a battered journal nearby and shows me with some pride. He says, "This is my art." The graphic has the soaring feel of a Marvel knockoff. On one side, the villains, George Soros, Bill Gates, and others from the Davos set. Opposing them, the reawakened lineup. It suggests a Clay Clark extended universe of never-ending culture war spin-offs and side quests, a doomsday forever fast approaching yet never arriving. A Bible floats above the heroes, a venomous snake above the baddies. Explosive lightning bolts frame the scene. "Sweet, right?" he says. "It's us versus them." Clark adjusts his glasses, gives a satisfied nod, then returns to work.